Now, right at 4 o'clock. Doug, welcome back.
Thank you.
I am actually one of the vice chairs, and I'm serving as chair today. Ardell Brady had to go back to Rochester. So what I'd like to do first is just cover a few housekeeping rules.
Sure.
Not rules, but our approach.
Yeah.
You've been through this before, so nothing much has changed. We'll invite you to provide your opening statement to us, and then we'll open up the floor so that council members can ask you questions. We will make every attempt to save 5 to 7 minutes at the end of questioning for you to ask us questions and to provide closing comments.
Okay. Sounds good.
So with that,
okay.
Please feel free to proceed.
Well, nice to meet all of you committee members who I haven't met. It's a real privilege to have been asked to come down here and interview with you guys. You have very tough decisions to make. I understand that. There's an old saying that goes like this: if you pick your committee members like you pick your pallbearers, you'll end up in the same place. So picking the regents has got to be a very tough job. I don't know how you actually do it.
Oh.
Anyways, I've loved the university, I guess, my whole life. It's been very good to our family. My father went to the university. I graduated in 1985 with a degree in applied economics. My three children all went here. One, my son is a sophomore in Carlson now. My oldest daughter graduated from Carlson with a degree in finance and is now with General Mills. And my daughter Becca is working in our business, and she got a degree in biological sciences. Mark is a sophomore in supply chain management at MIS. And it's kind of funny, Lois reminded me that he's the big chicken at all the games and in front of the scoreboard and at the Gophers basketball game. So he's a tall guy. As far as the U goes, it's been very important to me in my business. I'm a farmer, and as you know, the university research extends to all the farms in the state of Minnesota, and no different for us. We apply a lot of their research into our farm, and currently we raise turkeys, beef, and bees, and primarily turkeys. We have about 40 to 45 full-time employees, and it's been a great experience. Without the university, I don't think our turkey industry or the bee industry would even be in Minnesota at all. I also am a business owner in a small town. You do what you have to do to keep the town going and whatever, and it's evolved into one thing or another. And we have about three small businesses, and we have about 25 full-time employees in those businesses. In 2008, I got elected to the Otter Tail County Board. And Otter Tail County is up in the northern part of the state. We have 1,000 lakes, 2,000 square miles. I think more lakes than anywhere else in any other county in the United States. I've been on solid waste and public health. They're the two committees that I'm most passionate about. I'm also on budget and finance and extension and some other things. I'm just finished off terming out on – I was on advisory committee to Ag Statistics. It's a national committee. I just termed out. I was on there for six terms, and it's 20 members nationwide, and they're picked by the Secretary of Agriculture, and we go through all the farm surveys, and I was chair for the past 2 years. One of my strengths is in financial management. I like to travel extensively, and I noticed that the Earth's Great, or the U's new vision statement is helping solve the grand challenges of the Earth. As a farmer, and I can understand food is going to be a huge problem. In the Economist magazine earlier this week, they talked about that in the next 40 years, we're going to have to raise as much food as we did in the last 10,000 years to keep up to the demand. And so it's a huge challenge, and it's only going to be with the university's help and with researchers' help that we can do this, because according to National Geographic, we're going to have to do it with the same amount of land or less because of urban sprawl and encroachment, with dwindling water supplies, and with a whole bunch of other issues that we're going to have to try to get this done. And it's the only way we're going to be able to do this is by mixing organic farming in with conventional types of farming to meet these demands. I also said that I'm a public, our solid waste is another big thing I'm passionate about. I'm the chairman of Prairie Lakes Municipal Solid Waste Authority, which is a 5-county consortium, and we just recently did a $29 million expansion to the Perm Resource Recovery Facility, and it's really a cool project. We sort the garbage ahead of incinerating it, and then we're able to sell the energy to Bongard's Cheese Factory and Tuffy's Dog Food. And we're able to create, we expanded the plant. It was owned by the city of Perm, and our counties got together and bought it, and we did a voluntary EIS, which the MPCA doesn't. We're surprised that we did, but we wanted to make sure that there was less health risk concerns than it currently had, and we took actually the lower levels, and there's actually less emissions coming out of the plant than before we started, and so it's a really good deal. We just got it going. It just commissioned it. We just got through the demonstration level, and we've got to do the big, long 90-day commissioning, but it looks like it's going to be a big hit. It's burning very, very well, and we're selling a lot of steam. Millions and millions of dollars, probably up to $6 million worth of steam to our customers, depending upon where natural gas prices lie. But it's been fun. It's been a good project. I think I learned a lot about that, but there's so much more we can do. We can take organic matter, and we can do ash utilization and whatever else. So I've also been working with Lakes Country Service Cooperative, and this fall we opened our Fresh Connect Food Hub, which takes locally grown produce from farmers, and we distributed it to school districts. And right now, and we're going to do it to other government things, and we want to keep expanding this and keep growing it. It's been a big project, and we couldn't have done it without the University of Minnesota and also without the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. But it's a big project for us. Lakes Country Service Cooperative is an educational cooperative. We have approximately 125 employees, and we help counties and cities and school districts and any kind of nonprofits solve problems, whether it's safety-related, safety issues, or emergency management, that type of thing. We contract with schools, technology, health insurance, and that sort of thing. So as far as that goes, I just want to say that in the demographics category of finding your diversity on your board, I can help represent farmers and ranchers, small business, county and local governments, public health, service cooperatives, budget and audit, renewable energy, solid waste, extension, Rotary, Northern Minnesota, alumni, and of course, parents and students. So, anyways, that concludes my opening comments and any questions that you have.
Yep. Thank you. Mark?
Madam Chair and Mr. Hubusch, you mentioned that financial management is a strength of yours. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes.
Why it is, and relative to the Board of Regents, how that might work?
Well, I don't know how to explain it. I'm pretty good with numbers, but I didn't have the personality to be an accountant. I've just always been good with numbers. I enjoyed financial statements since I've been in high school, and I was a pre-veterinary medicine. I got my undergraduate degree, all my sciences done, and then I majored in economics, applied economics, and I really loved it. And from there, working in a small town in a farm or whatever, and you kind of migrate towards the financial side of things. And then just on just about every board and whatever, I'm on the audit and finance committee, including the AA, and now I'm on the audit and finance committee. Numbers come pretty good to me for some reason. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's my parents, but I've always enjoyed it, and I'm not scared by big numbers, and I can do the math in my head pretty easily. So,
thank you,
Madam Chair. If I might,
sure,
do a
Lois.
Quick follow-on to that. I had the privilege of doing Mr. Hipsch's references, and in the brief time when I shared them, one of the written pieces that some of you may have seen but that I didn't happen to share was under other comments to make about Mr. Hipsch. And to the point of didn't know if he could make it as an accountant because of what the accountant's life is, the reference said, Mr. Hipsch loves people. So to the end of an accountant being with a green eye shade and a pen, Mr. Hipsch needs more people than that.
That's true.
Jerry, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'll just change that a little bit. I noticed you had been involved with public health.
Yes.
And, you know, a significant portion of the university has to do with health care and health care education and the academic health center, both from the what they produce as well as their expenses. And what do you see as the need for the university to be involved with production of health care for, especially for greater Minnesota?
Yeah.
How do you see how that fitting in?
Well, I'm the chair-elect of the State Community Health Services Advisory Committee, which gives advisory committee to the Commissioner of Public Health, and there's so many issues out there. I don't know where to begin, but it's everything from, you know, I don't want to use the word desert, but we kind of live in a food desert in a lot of ways because of our six-month winter, and to try to get fresh food and healthy foods, and the whole omnivore dilemma thing with increasing obesity among children and especially in rural Minnesota, I think we have a lot of jobs, but we don't have, they're not high-paying jobs, and so that creates us to eat the wrong types of foods. I think that's a big issue. I know another big issue is this whole marijuana thing. They want the university. there isn't a lot of research on marijuana right now, and they know that they're embarking on this, which is fine, but they want the university to do more research. And unfortunately, with the way federal laws are and whatever, you can't. There isn't much that they can do at this point because of federal regulations. So we're working on that. There's just a whole host of other issues. Everything from a shortage of doctors, which I think the university could be very helpful in helping. I know there's the cost of residency is very high, but I think that if it's a supply and demand situation, if we can get more doctors and more healthcare workers in rural Minnesota, I think we could cut costs somewhat. So.
Pat?
Madam Chair, Mr. Hipsch, would you please comment on your perspective of the roles that MNSCU, private colleges, and the University of Minnesota play in the education and also in the development of the state's economy?
Thank you. I think it's huge. It's obviously huge, but right now there in rural Minnesota, which I can speak to, the jobs aren't necessarily matching up to what's needed. Right now, we have literally thousands of job openings in northern Minnesota that can't be filled. And I think I was glad to see that the university increased its number of STEM-related degrees by over 10%, 13%, or something like that, which I think is huge, and I think that's a good start because a lot of the jobs that we see are low-paying jobs, and they can be done by robotics. And by putting in some of these robotics, it's going to help give higher-paying jobs. I had a chance to go to kibbutz in Israel, and I was in this plant, and they were making everything, a real high-tech plant, and virtually robotics were doing everything, and they said that they had less error and more precise, and it was very, very interesting. And we're starting to see that, but it's just so expensive right now. We need more people to move out of the industry, out of the university, into industry to help out and to show where we can eliminate these some of these functions.
Okay. If I could, a follow up.
Certainly.
Actually, the other part of the question that I was hoping you would answer is what roles do those different institutions play, and what areas do they overlap, and what areas do they have distinct roles between MNSCU, private colleges, and the university?
Okay. Well, in MNSCU, they're doing more of the technology, more of the hands-on training, at least in the vo-technical and the junior college type things. But in terms of the university, right now there's too much overlap, I think. I think right now, Southwest State is putting in an ag education program to address the shortage of ag teachers. And, I don't know if we're filling up our ag education program here at St. Paul. So to add a program because of proximity, I don't think is just the right reason. I think you're going to add cost by doing that. Maybe there's something else that we currently don't have that we need to do out in Southwest State. I don't know, to get their enrollment up. But I don't think just adding a program is going to help. I think that the whole idea of, lining up, I think the university somewhat hurts itself. The ACT scores are so high coming into, let's say, the College of Biological Sciences, that they're kind of pre-weeding out the graduate school, but yet we're still grading on a curve, and we're hurting our own students. Yale quit doing that. They said, hey, if you're good enough to get into Yale, you're good enough to get into our graduate programs. We're going to give everybody A's or something like that. I don't know what they exactly said. And so if we're having a 1 in 10 acceptance rate or a 1 in 7 acceptance rate at the College of Biological Sciences, we're getting a lot of our best students already. And I think that's what we have to say, okay, what are each individual school at? I mean, if they're going to just recruit students because they got to fill slots, that's the wrong reason. Maybe we have too many 4-year colleges, I'm not sure. So, pretty blunt.
Thank you for your directness and candidness.
Yeah.
Lois?
I was going to go down the economic development path also, and I'm working on reformulating my question. Let's go to the industry openings, and that a fair number of them could, a year, 2 years, whatever, down the road, be robotic.
Yeah.
How then do we grow our economies in greater Minnesota with insight from the university? Basic question. Targeted question. What role does entrepreneurship play in that? And how can we meld university innovation, university IP, greater Minnesota job development, and entrepreneurship?
That's a good, very good question, and I don't know if I'm qualified to answer it. I can tell you that in Perm, where I live, the entrepreneurship is alive and well, and we're really competing for workers, and which is raising the price per hour, which is kind of nice, and that's enabling more and more apartments to go up, and how the university melds into that eventually. Labor will get to a point where we'll need to apply technology. One of the reasons why I was in Israel is we couldn't compete with our labor market anymore, and so we imported technology from the little country of Israel and Turkey, and they were the best at making this technology. And so, and that enabled us to hire higher quality people at a higher price, obviously, and pay them more. And we substituted technology for labor. And worked out well, and the technology is working great, and have a great relationship. The second part of your question was?
The question was, if we're displacing people from jobs that aren't paying enough, and we still want to keep them in the area, they need other forms of employment. And so to what extent can entrepreneurship that might leverage university intellectual property, university licensing, how can we work with our university to do that?
Well, I don't know if there's a great answer for that. I think that right now, by applying the technology, if we had it, we'd be able to fill jobs that were already there, that are wide open, and we just have to get to that first level. Last summer, especially, trucks are going half full out of Perm, and that's expensive, and it's, with energy costs the way they are, because they don't have enough workers to fill the trucks, and Target or whoever needs the product coming out. And so it all comes around. It all cycles around. A little bit of help. We're always going to have new industries forming and new industries happening, and we'll always have a need, I think, for all levels of workers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Paul?
An important initiative that the legislature funded 2 years ago was MnDrive, one of the four cornerstones of that program, is agriculture, food safety. How do you see that fitting into your broad view of greater Minnesota?
The issue of food safety?
The MnDrive program, its focus on food production and food safety, and how would that relate to...
I'm not familiar with the specifics of that program, but okay. I know food safety in my business is really driving things, and then the consumer is entitled to a safe, healthy product, and we're doing more and more testing and whatever else all the way through the processing plant to address food safety improvements.
So you're a turkey farmer, if
yes.
you will.
Yes.
So how do you deal with food safety and traceability when you're selling your
all the samples that we take, it's taken back to the flocks, and okay. continuous improvement is required.
Thank you.
Yeah. Margaret? Every organization that you've served on, yeah. you were eventually the chair. So you've had a lot of leadership experience. As you look back at that, what experience did you fail as a leader? What did you learn about it that's applicable to serving on the Board of Regents?
You know, I think, if you're taking risk in life, you're going to fail. And on all the boards I've been on, there's been failures at some point and then success stories on another. You just keep mm-hmm. working through it and changing and adapting, and hopefully you get it better. I can't give, I don't know of any specific examples off the top of my head where...
Can you think of a do-over?
Oh, yeah, I mean...
Just give us one do-over.
One of the issues that we're having is four of our lakes are flooded because they don't have a natural outlet, and we're trying to get these lakes vented. There's about 1,000 people that live in these lakes. And it was very difficult. The process was difficult because there's all the downstream interests and upstream interests, and there's a lot of fighting. And we probably should have backed up and started over and reformulated the plan before we went forward, because it's still in limbo right now. So I would have taken that back a step and then went forward in a different direction.
Thank you. Jerry?
Thank you. One of the issues at the university is the cost of tuition for students continues to go up. But for the past 2 years, the administration has kept the tuition at the same level by virtue of the state legislature offering some funding.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be asked to do the same again this year. We're not sure how long that can be expected to be the way you gain some revenue. What ideas might you have as far as to gain revenue as a university?
Well, I was reading in U.S. World Report or something about the different foundations and at the university. I think Harvard is number one, followed by Yale, followed by all the rest of the Ivy Leagues. I think Michigan is a Big Ten school up there. I think the whole idea of getting the best and brightest students is going to really help the state of Minnesota by keeping these students in Minnesota. And so I'm all for this tuition freeze. I think we'll get the money back later when these great students come up with great ideas and that I can't even think of what they are. But I think that's an important part of it. And I think that university has to be on par with other universities in terms of research as well, especially if we're going to solve our regional problems right here. And does that answer your question?
Well, I was leading more to how do they gain the revenue that they need to operate?
How does it?
Other than getting money from sources such as the legislature,
yeah.
Donations from
okay,
donations,
I see what you're saying.
Are there ways that they can, gain money?
The thing is the intellectual property that the university creates is could be future revenue streams, and if we get great researchers creating great inventions, we can increase that revenue stream that way. They're going to have to get it either from our alumni or from the state itself or from tuition. So How do we do that? You know, getting the $445,000 alumni invigorated. I mean, that's a lot of alumni. It's got to be some of the most of anywhere in the United States. And we got to get them more involved in giving, and we do that through making them proud of the university, whether it's through athletics or through other means, through inventions, through, you know. And I think we're on a really, really good track with that right now, with our increased graduation rates and that sort of thing.
And I'll take the next question.
Sure.
You have a lot of experience on boards and in chair roles. How would you describe your greatest weaknesses and your greatest strengths, not necessarily in that order, as a board member? Mm-hmm. What do you view as your greatest strengths and your greatest weaknesses as a board member?
I would say my greatest strength, I'm really a collaborator. I like to collaborate and like to connect the dots between getting stuff done, and I like to bring people on board, even if that means backing up. To get this $29 million project done with 25-20 commissioners, we travel to all over the state to try to get people on board and to get them to buy in. I think I jumped to a conclusion too fast, I think, too, as well. That's probably my biggest weakness. I think I should step back sooner on things and listen more, probably. So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Additional questions?
If you were to pass through, and thank you for coming, yeah. If you were to pass through and become a regent, you'd be on for 6 years.
Yeah.
Now you project yourself forward 6 years into the future. And you're back here 6 years, and it's today, 6 years in the future. What has to happen for you to be personally and professionally happy with the contributions you've made as a regent to the University of Minnesota?
Well, there's a host of issues. One is getting more of our top students and athletes from Minnesota to stay in Minnesota. That's probably number one. And the second thing is I think 30% of our buildings were considered good or fair, and 55% are poor or worse, and we need to upgrade our facilities in a big way, and that's going to mean that the legislature or whoever is going to have to stick additional cash into keeping this a great institution. That's the only way we're going to keep kids coming here. So I think that those two things, I'd like to see that number continually rise every year. Maybe it might take 20 years to get us up to 80% or 70% fair or better, but I was talking to my kids, because the buildings I go in are all really nice, you know. But the buildings that they're having class in aren't that way, and some of the labs are getting older, and we just need to, we really need to take a critical look at ourselves, and if we're going to compete with the Ivy League and the other Big Ten universities, we're going to have good facilities. So, yeah.
Thank you. Additional questions? Lois?
Going to bricks and mortar and your students, your children and the students that you can reach.
Yeah.
What kinds of conversations have you had? What conclusions have you perchance drawn on the topic of digital education and kind of, you know, how does that mix with buildings that need to be upgraded? Do we upgrade the buildings, or do we say the future is going to look very different, we don't need buildings? And what have the students had to say about that?
Yeah. I haven't had specific conversations with any students on that. My three kids have all had or are having a great education here at the U. I have zero complaints. I don't think the cost is out of line. I think that we're moving more towards digital degrees and I think master's programs and some of that stuff. I think there's some learning to be had by students going into university, setting up camp there, learning the social skills, learning that other stuff. Now, if somebody is after they're graduated with their 4-year degree, I think it's makes sense for them. They're in their career and they're working in Outstate Minnesota to work on their master's degree or doctorate degrees from a distance. But for undergraduate, I think there's a lot to be learned on the social sense and the discipline and that sort of thing, getting themselves out of bed and whatever.
Jerry?
You're removing the gold tie, you mentioned keeping students and athletes in our state. University being an academic and a research institution and a major economic driver, where do we fit something like college athletics into this academic institution? How does that fit together, and how does that make us a better institution?
I think it ties in perfectly, because I think that they're revenue-producing sports, and I think it creates proud alumni, and proud alumni have lots of giving. Getting to play on the 1st of January for the Gophers, it's huge for the state. All kinds of people were talking about the Minnesota Gophers, and they buy clothing, and they buy all these other stuff, and the kids want to go there, and we start attracting better and brighter students. And it's so I think it's important, but I don't think you need to have it. I think it's part of a dimension. We've gone down that path saying that's what we want to do. I know University of Chicago and some other places have gone down a different path, and they're successful too. So it just depends on what path we've gone down. And I think we're going down the path of wanting to win in athletics. We're hiring good coaches and good athletes. We're trying to attract good athletes. So I think that's an important part of it. That answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
So do we have any additional questions from council members?
I was at the sister's level.
Okay.
Thank you. So what I will do then is ask you, do you have questions of us?
I really don't. I've been through this process. I know it's a really hard choice. I know it's I know county governments do a lot of business with the U. It'd be nice to get a county commissioner eventually, maybe not me or somebody, onto this board. I think I'm respected among other county commissioners for things I've done. And I'd like to just emphasize that, you know, the 4-H programs are huge that the university puts out, and whatever happens, I don't want to see those cut, because it really hits a different demographic in our communities that need this for showing livestock or whatever, and without this, it's... With children, I believe that you pay now or pay later. So when I see them in chemical dependency, or I see them on our human services side, you know, it's $800 a day, and we're thinking, why didn't we spend this money early on and ECFE and Head Start and right on down the line? And we, as a society, we got to invest in our children all the way through their college, and we have to figure out a way, because that's the way we're going to get a return on investment. Out of our $90 million budget in the county, you know, half of it is social services that are passed through to the state. We spend very, very little, you know, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 in public health, some of our hugest. The rest is all after the fact, in offense, I'm talking, a very little amount of money. And so I know it's a competitive process to become a regent. I think I have a skill set that would be unique to the board with my agriculture and county, small government, public health, that sort of thing. So thank you for letting me talk to you today, and I know I talked too much, and I'm sorry about that.
any additional comments? Or?
I have a question. Sure. Doug, I think your life has given you lots of opportunities to reach towards the university for insight and guidance. You talked in your opening statement about research that applies to within the agriculture sector, but you just referenced multiple other ways.
Yeah.
Have you always been pleased with the way that the university has fielded or enabled your reach in? And is that something that you think you might be able to bring to the university to say, you are our singular land-grant university, let's really improve the way in which you interface with the citizenry.
In my industry, on the turkey side, it's been wonderful. We're cutting positions, we're cutting stuff, and going forward, we recently had in the late 90s, we had a thing called pneumovirus that was specific to only Minnesota producers. And nobody else cared about this issue in the whole country except for Minnesota producers. And so with the university's help, we set up, and the legislature, and our help with that, we set up the Rapid Response Fund for agriculture, and we used the first money for that to solve the pneumovirus problem. And it was a really easy fix with vaccine, but there wasn't a natural cure. You know, hadn't they done that, I don't know if I'd be in this room talking right now. So it's been good, and a host of other issues from research and stuff that they've implemented that we use every day in our farms and our employees use. I sent three of our employees, and I've taken the beekeeping short course. It's wonderful. We have a shortage of bees in this country, and we're learning how to do it, and we're really enjoying that. So everything that the U has told me from my farms I've implemented has worked great. We have to keep that momentum going because there's challenges that we don't even know about that are coming, and one is water. You know, as in, we need to start using alternative irrigation methods and, all these other types of things. You know, it's going to be huge in the whole GMO, organic versus conventional. I think they both have to win. I think we're going to need some organic and some conventional. We're going to have to meld the two because we're going to have to use less resources on less land to deliver food to 9.2 billion people by the year, whatever, 2050.
So with that, Doug, I will invite you to share with us any additional closing comments that you might have.
I guess I don't know yet.
Okay.
I just want to thank everyone and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us again. Mm-hmm.